KGW's Rod Hill.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and the bad news is that the Pacific Northwest has some of the worst waste in welfare programs in America, and now it's time to pay the price. And I know that you're going to hear screaming and yelling from liberal Democrats who are holding public office in the Pacific Northwest say, we're going to lose billions of dollars. No. The truth is, you've been wasting billions of dollars, and now finally the federal government under Donald Trump has said, if you're going to waste that kind of money, then you're going to own some of the waste, meaning you're going to take some of the cuts that come with it. Let me get into the details of that in just a moment. But first, welcome to a tune of every single Newsday. And if you want to join the conversation, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And of course, as always, naysayers go to the head of the line on this program. Always have and always will. Now, our ex-poll question today. And this one came to our attention just a few moments ago, although apparently it's been in the works in one state for a long time. And I want you to think about whether or not this would be a great thing to do in both Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Should the states empty their prisons of hundreds and hundreds, perhaps even thousands, of illegal aliens by sending them home? In other words, hand them over to ICE and they are sent home. Now, if you say, Lars, that's a crazy idea. Actually, the state of Oklahoma, under Governor Kevin Stitt, is doing exactly that right now. And when I see a great idea like that, one of the first things I think of is, could we apply that to the Washington Department of Corrections and the Oregon Department of Corrections and the Idaho Department of Corrections? I've told you the numbers before. There are some very bad people who are locked up in prison in the state of Oregon and the state of Washington who are also illegal aliens. Well, if we could send them back home, if they are nearing the end of their sentences, why not just shortcut that, hand them to ICE, and save a gigantic amount of money? The money is absolutely extraordinary. Right now, in the state of Oklahoma, they spend about $36,000 every single year to lock up one person, $36,000 a year. Now, how much are they going to save? Well, they're going to immediately send home about 500 illegal aliens. They're going to simply cut out the middleman, send them straight to Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, and say, send these jokers home. Most of them are men. Most of them have committed some kind of crime. Most of them are nonviolent offenders, but still, they are locked up in the state prison in Oklahoma, and they're going to send them home. They're going to save $500 times $36,000. They figure, at the bare minimum, they're going to start out by saving $1 million a month. Now, I realize that in multi-billion dollar state budgets, $1 million a month isn't all that much all at once. But imagine where you could better spend that money on all the things that states and cities actually need more than they need to lock up illegal aliens. So the question goes this way. Should states empty their prisons of illegal aliens by sending them home, as Oklahoma is doing? You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, we had an interesting ex-poll question. Should all members of Congress be forced to take and then publicly disclose their IQ test? 81% of you said yes. I thought it was kind of strange that 19% of you were naysayers on that idea. The idea came from President Trump, who posted on Truth Social that Jasmine Crockett, who's a not very smart member of Congress from the state of Texas. She is a Democrat as well, although I said not very smart, so I may be repeating myself. But Trump said that she ought to have to take some kind of cognitive test and that she's not very bright. He also applied that to other members of the squad, people like AOC and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and, of course, Jasmine Crockett, who's probably the dumbest of the bunch. In any case, ultimate result, 81% of you said yes to the IQ test. Only 19% of you said no. But let me get back to welfare and waste in the Pacific Northwest. Oregon owns some of the worst waste in welfare programs in all of America, and now it has come time to pay the price. And Governor Kotek is whining about how her waste of taxpayer money is going to cost her. So, what's the bottom line? Well, in 2024, the food stamp program had what they called an administrative error rate of more than 14%. The average nationwide is about 6%. There are states that get it down to 3 or 4%, meaning in most cases, they've simply decided to pay more money out in food stamps to people who are not entitled to it or not entitled to that much. So what did the one big beautiful bill passed by the Congress, signed by the president do? It said, Oregon, you're going to lose a lot of money. Number one, you're going to lose some SNAP benefits. Number two, because you have such a high error rate, eighth highest in all of 50 states, number eight for worst in America, number eight. They're not number one, but they are number eight. Alaska is actually one of the worst at near the top of that list. But it must come down to below 6%. Otherwise, the state of Oregon has to pay 75% of the paperwork costs, the administrative costs of running a SNAP in the state, about $500 million every 2 years. So in other words, because Tina Kotek is making such massive errors, and I put it on her, and why? Because Tina Kotek, governor of the state, elected on stolen cryptocurrency money, and nobody was ever prosecuted for that, an illegal campaign contribution that was one of the biggest campaign contributions that the Democrats ever got, but the attorney general saw fit not to prosecute anybody for taking that illegal campaign contribution. And then when it turned out it was actually stolen cryptocurrency investor money, nobody prosecuted for that or either. They're also going to lose Medicaid money. They're going to lose other kinds of social welfare. The total loss will be about $15 billion, and much of it simply because Tina Kotek runs an incompetent state of Oregon. Now, what could they do? If you were the governor of a state and you had that kind of error rate that was wasting money at about double the rate of most states in America and eighth worst in America, you could call the states that have the lowest error rates and say, how are you getting it done? And when they tell you how to get it done and how to accurately hand out those SNAP benefits, then you could adjust things and get it down to 6% or below 6%. That alone would save Oregon taxpayers a lot of money. Instead, I suspect that Tina Kotek is not going to do anything of the kind. She's simply going to tell Oregonians, because of my incompetence, you folks get to pay another $500 million every 2 years. If you like that idea, you probably voted for Tent City Tina Kotek. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
No need to adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense? nonsense.
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
Hey, ask yourself this. Are you ready for a steaming, stinking pile of propaganda? Try the PSU study, the one that claims that Oregon legalizing hard drugs 4 years ago did not contribute to the gigantic increase in drug overdose deaths over those same 4 years. Instead, I'd like you to consider a few facts. Voters passed Measure 110 in Oregon by an overwhelming margin back in November of 2020. Fentanyl deaths surged 50% the very next year. No connection there, the study says. Oregon lawmakers finally recriminalized fentanyl last year, and overdose deaths dropped by 22%. But PSU's study says no connection. The other factor, of course, was open borders Joe Biden, another foolish choice by the voters. Since most fentanyl comes in from south of the Rio Grande, you might just see a connection there. I certainly do. Consider the numbers. Under an open borders president, fentanyl seizures peaked at 27,000 pounds a year. Now, I did the math on that just to put that in context. That is not quite 6 billion lethal doses of fentanyl, enough to almost kill everybody on planet Earth. Hey, thanks a lot for that, Joe. Or you could just close your lying eyes, throw out your common sense, and believe the university researchers at PSU who claim there's no connection between legalizing hard drugs and deaths from hard drugs. Glad to be with you on a Tuesday. Always glad to take your calls on the Radio Northwest Network. We attempt to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our X poll. The other thing I'd like you to consider, did you notice how that PSU study got almost uniform coverage from just about everybody? If you don't believe me, go take a look at the websites for the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, Oregon Live, K2, Channel 2, KPTV, Channel 12, Channel 8, and Channel 6, and tell me if there's a dime's worth of difference between the stories about that study. The study that says, yep, Oregon legalized drugs. Why? Because a New York drug advocacy group funded by George Soros wrote the ballot measure, backed it up with millions of dollars, persuaded voters to vote it in, and of course, people died as a result. But do we want to see a connection there? They do not, and PSU has done a study proving that. Question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Is Washington's Department of Transportation taking good care of the multiple billions of dollars in infrastructure that it controls, like roads and bridges? Now, this came from a loyal Lars listener who wrote to one of his members of the legislature. Another WashDOT failure. SR-202 bridge over the Snoqualmie River at the falls was last painted 35 years ago. No plans to put paint on it now. So, a state lawmaker's office wrote back to him. That's Brett Kappel, who is a senior legislative assistant to Keith Grainer, who is the 12th district senator. And what did he write back? Mike, I heard back from WashDOT on the SR-202 bridge. Here is their response. This bridge, built in 1931, was last painted around 1990, so 35 years ago. It had a brand new deck and joints installed in 2021. Historically, we have painted this structure every 15 to 20 years up to the point of its last paint job in 1990. The last routine inspection of the bridge was completed in September of last year. This inspection did note rust and corrosion. Wow. Despite this, no painting work is currently programmed for the bridge. In addition to the painting, the bridge is due or past due for deck rehabilitation, expansion joint replacement, and superstructure rehab. Despite all of this, given current funding allocations for structure preservation statewide, it is unlikely that funding will be allocated to this bridge anytime soon. Unfortunately, this is not a unique situation given the age of our infrastructure and the prolonged lack of preservation funding, as seems to be the case so often with this agency. and the state. There is never enough of your money to pay for what needs to be done. Seems they find plenty of money to do what they want or start a new program. Senator Graner continues to push for more of the gas tax funding and at least some of that carbon tax funding to go to maintaining what we already have. You can probably guess how that conversation has gone. Sincerely, Brant Kappel, senior legislative aide to Keith Graner. Now, I want to ask you this. They've got billions of dollars for light rail in both the Puget Sound region and also the light rail they want to push across the new interstate bridge if that ever gets built. But they don't have the money to put paint on a 35-year unpainted bridge that needs it and is falling apart. Tell me that that makes any sense. It doesn't to me. My favorite post on X today, my fellow talk show host, Ari Hoffman, who works on our affiliate station, KVI, points out Chris Twombly, a Mercer Island, Washington teacher, was accused of sexually abusing students, but stayed in the classroom. He was never convicted, but he was accused. He stayed in the classroom 8 years after a 2016 tip. The district then paid him $70,000 to quietly resign this year. No charges filed due to an expired statute of limitations. Parents are calling it a cover-up. And given the information I've seen so far, I would have to agree. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Well, I mentioned Measure 110 before. One other aspect of that, when they finally so-called recriminalized drugs in Oregon, they also said, but you don't arrest people, you don't charge them with a crime, you give them deflection. Well, nobody had ever heard of what deflection was. Multnomah County completed its deflection center at a cost of almost $4 million. Well, guess what the results are? Our friends at the NBC affiliate KGW Channel 8 said one person was in detox during the first 3 months of this year. Multnomah County defines completion of the program as simply accessing services, meaning you talk to somebody in person or on the phone. In 3 months, five people chose outpatient treatment, one went into inpatient detox, and what did that cost? $3.8 million to turn a temporary location into what they call the Coordinated Care Pathway Center. Since then, funding for operations there, $4.3 million. So for $8 million, you got all of six people that got some kind of care. Does that make sense to you? Our best email of the day, but you can always send more, brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They did it for me. The result is beautiful. Go to CapConcreteCoatings.com or 855-CAP-DAT. From an anonymous police officer listener, Lars, I didn't get a chance to listen. I'm sure you talked about Trump getting the feds involved in D.C. Please remind listeners that Obama also inserted the feds into numerous local police departments when he was president. Big difference in the reasons, though. Trump is trying to make D.C. safer. Obama was all about de-policing, which led to increased crime. I've been a police officer more than 25 years, and I've seen it firsthand. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. When he talks, you have no choice but to listen. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and I want to start with a confession. In a safe, locked up safely, I have a number of magazines that fit into rifles that I own. Those are magazines I could not buy legally today because of ridiculous and, I think, unconstitutional laws in both the state of Oregon and the state of Washington. But because I bought them before the ban went into effect, I don't have to worry. I'm grandfathered in. But if you wanted to buy one of those 30-round magazines, it would be a crime in the state of Washington for you to buy that, and it would be a crime to sell it. Now, I think that law is unconstitutional, as I said, and the man who's going to challenge it is Wally Wentz, who joins me now. Mr. Wentz, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars. Thanks for having me.
Wally is the owner of Gator's Guns, or Gator Guns. How would you mind explaining to the audience how you ran into trouble with the state of Washington and its law and how you plan to contest it?
Sure, sure. 2 years ago plus, I received a registered letter and asking for information, and not charged with a crime, but asking about sales and sales records, and allegedly I did something, and this and that and the other, and I didn't really have any background in law or what I had to do. So I ended up calling out to several people. Bill Kirk, Washington Gun Law, was one of them. I actually got a hold of him and had a conversation, and he said, I want to hold you up. I know some people that can help you. And he got me hooked up with the Silent Majority Foundation out of Tri-Cities, Washington. And the last 2 years have been a fight. We ended up getting sued by the state of Washington, the Attorney General's office, for what we might have done. And we sued them back on constitutional grounds for Senate Bill 5078, which banned the sale and transfer, manufacture, importation of magazines with a capacity over 10 rounds.
By the way, I've heard plenty of liberals who've said, why that ban on large size magazines, they consider large to be more than 10 rounds, has increased safety right in Washington State. Now, you've been selling guns for a good long time, Mr. Wentz. Do you see any way that banning the sale of 10-plus magazines in any way makes us safer?
No, it absolutely does not. Having a capacity to fight in defense of yourself, your property, your family, your state, and your country, we have constitutional rights protecting those abilities. Very, very regulated. And they want to make it sound like it's all in behoof of safety. No study, no data shows that crimes accelerated or decelerated depending on magazine capacity. The only thing it does is hinder your exercising of your Second Amendment rights.
In fact,
ask anybody who's been shot at if they want a 10-round magazine or a 30-round magazine.
Yeah, no kidding. Wally, let me ask you this. I'll bet you, like me, know a lot of cops, don't you?
Absolutely. I'm across the street from the Kelso Police Department. They're my neighbor.
Do you know of a single cop who carries a less than 10-round magazine in his gun that he her gun that she carries to work?
No, there are none. No law enforcement officer on patrol every day is required to use a 10-round magazine, to my knowledge, in any of the states. If there's an exemption, it's for them. For fighting for themselves and the public against people who break laws, who aren't going to abide by any gun control law, statute, or manifestation of reality. It doesn't happen.
No, in fact, if an officer went out and went up against somebody, most of them want to have 17 or 19 rounds, as many as they can get. And in many cases, in a real firefight, which happened not all that often, but when they do, you often see officers change magazines multiple times because you don't need just 10 or 20. You may need 30 or 40 rounds. But that's a privilege extended to law enforcement, but then forbidden to citizens?
Doesn't seem constitutional, does it, Lars?
No, it doesn't seem. In fact, banning any other accessory for a gun, because the fact is, I know it's not the same as an accessory like a scope or a suppressor or something like that. But this is essential to the function of a semi-automatic pistol. And to tell citizens you can't even buy a gun that is capable of holding more than 10 rounds, not that it does hold, just that it's capable of. So what have your lawyers now decided to do? And would you mind talking about this? These guys, Clement and Murphy, have quite a win record, don't they?
They do indeed, and they bring a lot to the table. And that was with Silent Majority Foundation. Actually, that was their goal. We had a little shakeup in my legal team. One of them, Pete Serrano, who was one of the lead counsel for me, just got pinned up for Eastern District of Washington United States Attorney under Pam Bondi and Donald Trump, which was a loss for me, but in the end, I think it's going to be a really, really good thing for the people of Washington.
Yeah, to be the U.S. District Attorney for Eastern Washington, answering back to the federal government and the DOJ. It's a great move for Pete Serrano. He's been on the show before. So you lose him, but you gain the group of lawyers that actually won in the now famous Bruin case.
Exactly. No, I'm really excited. The NRA's stepping up and helping with legal costs twice, and Clement Murphy acknowledging the work that Silent Majority Foundation has done and having the confidence to take this case on with Silent Majority Foundation is stupendously positive in my mind. You know, they are the ones that made Bruin v. New York a household thing in the gun community. They did that. That was a win.
That's a big win. They have now made a request to the Supreme Court, right?
Silent Majority Foundation and Clement Murphy have petitioned for review with SCOTUS, our case. And if granted that review, you know, we will need four of the justices out east to accept it for review. And hopefully we can find that portion of it by end of year as a educated guess by my legal counsel. And if that happens, it would be going into the longer portion of a back and forth between the state and between my legal representation, being Silent Majority Foundation and Clement Murphy.
Because haven't some lower courts, Wally, already found that bans on so-called high-capacity magazines are unconstitutional?
Our district court, Superior Court judge here in Cowles County called it that way after a very serious period of deliberation and the evidence from the state and from my legal counsel. He said the law was unconstitutional, and it was stayed for 70 minutes, I believe, if I'm remembering right, 70 or 80 minutes. And we opened the store on an off day that we're normally closed, and we're open for that 70 or 80 minutes, inside of 20 minutes. We had product out and product going out the door. I had people lined up outside the door.
Because they wanted to be able to exercise their Second Amendment freedoms. That's Wally Wentz. Wally is the owner of Gator Guns, which is now appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court. Take our case and decide this issue of high-capacity magazine. Back in a moment. I can certainly...
actually want to be at. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our X poll question today: should states empty their prisons of illegal aliens by sending them home? That's what Oklahoma is doing right now. They figure they can dump out about 500 prisoners that are costing them about $36,000 every year. That's about $3,000 a month that they're going to save. It adds up to about $1 million every month that they will save immediately. Now, what they plan to do, they're not going to release the rapists. They're not going to release the murderers. But the ones that have sentences that are about to be complete, they're simply going to hand them over to ICE and let ICE do with them as they will, which is probably send them home. It's going to save Oklahoma a lot of money. I think that it would probably do the same for the Pacific Northwest. Northwest. So I'd answer yes, the state should empty their prisons of illegal aliens by sending them home, wherever home happens to be. Today's X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. If you'd like to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day on the Radio Northwest Network. So your calls are welcome. Let me say this about the folks in Seattle. I mean, I just don't understand this. Donald Trump has said that it is a national embarrassment that Washington, D.C. has so much crime. And what he gets back from that is the leadership in Washington, D.C., which is a city that only exists because Congress created it. Do you understand the difference between Washington, D.C. and every other city in America? For instance, here in the Pacific Northwest, there are five what they call home rule charter cities. They're the big ones: Vancouver, Tacoma, Seattle, Spokane. I think Tri-Cities is in there as well. The smaller cities are actually all there only because the legislature created them, and the legislature could wipe them out tomorrow if they chose to. In the home rule cities, they're given a bit of what they call autonomy. That is, they're allowed to form their own charter, write their own laws. But that's only five of them in the state of Washington, about the same number in the state of Oregon. Now, what is the difference? A home rule charter city essentially makes its own rules within the state of Oregon or the state of Washington. In the case of Washington, D.C., until the early 1970s, Washington, D.C. was entirely under federal control. They wanted to get home rule charter status at that point, and Congress gave it to them. But ultimately, the U.S. Congress controls and oversees the city of Washington, D.C. as the capital city of the United States. So does Donald Trump have the authority to actually say crime is too bad? I'm going to take over the Metro D.C. Police Department. I'm going to do that for 30 days. I'm going to run the operation and I'm going to clean up the mess, not just the crime mess, but also the mess of homeless people there as well. So you get this ridiculous objection of people like, well, Como News is reporting local leaders in Seattle are voicing strong opposition to Donald Trump's decision to take control of the police department in D.C. and deploy the National Guard. In other words, the Democrats don't want the murder and crime problem in Washington, D.C. to be tackled. They're happy to leave it the way it is. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell criticized the move, saying it was a distraction from the president's unfulfilled campaign promises. I'd love to talk to Mayor Harrell. We've asked him on the show before. He said, "We're not perfect, but no city is." Do you think that anybody thinks that Seattle is anywhere near to perfect when it comes to crime? But he's saying this would set a precedent for taking the same action against other cities. Apparently, Bruce Harrell is not very bright and does not know that Washington, D.C. is entirely a different kind of creation, a creation of Congress, whereas the city of Seattle was created by the state of Washington and then given home rule status. The two cities could not be more different when it comes to whether or not the president has authority to take over the local cops. Let's go to Rick, who's a naysayer. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I had told him that I heard you talking about buses going through Madras, Oregon before, and you had mentioned you didn't think that it was easy to verify whether those were illegals heading through.
That was quite some time ago, but yeah, I had people call and say, I saw a big white bus. It had a lot of Hispanic people on it. I think they might be illegals. And I said, how in the world would you prove that or establish that? Have you found a way to prove it?
Well, I've been observing those since about 90 days after the Bidens came into office and throughout his administration. And I've seen as many as two, which each bus holds 50 individuals, and I've seen as much as six, and that's just when I'm going through town at lunchtime.
Okay, but hold on, Rick. You're counting buses. How do you establish who those people are? Are they Hispanic tourists from somewhere else in America? Are they illegal aliens being taken to jobs? How do you go about proving that?
Okay, I've lived in this area a long time, and the immigrants that come in to work the jobs, there's men, women, old, young, children, there's all things. These buses have only carried military-age men. consistently. They've never had anything but military age men on these buses with 50 per bus. Usually I see.
So how do you know they're not on their way to JBLM or to the Yakima firing range for the military? I'm asking you the question one more time. We're going to run out of time. How do you know they're illegals?
They don't speak English. They stop by the Mexican restaurants, and they even built them a special little food pavilion on the corner.
And there's the proof. Thank you, Nick. Or Rick.
The Lars Larson.
Oregon. We'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. And boy, is it hot out there. The Pacific Northwest is seeing a few days of very hot weather. And of course, this will get all the usual suspects out there. Newspapers, cartel media, they'll all be telling you it's all about global warming. Well, it's not. It's weather. It does get hot in August. It is the summertime. Don't be surprised by it. In fact, I saw or I heard a meteorologist this morning who was saying, yeah, we didn't even set a record. The record was actually set years ago for yesterday's day when they actually got a much warmer temperature. So for everybody who says it's global warming, just ask yourself, in the Pacific Northwest, if you get a couple of days around 100 over or beyond over or under 100 degrees, is it that surprising when you get those days in the middle of August of a summer? It is not at all a surprise to me, nor is it global warming. In any case, I want to talk about the fact that Oregon DMV is selling your personal data. I mean, for all the concern that those people in government have about protecting people's data, the state of Oregon is literally bringing in millions of dollars. I'm relying on a report by K2, the ABC affiliate, but they point out Oregon's Department of Motor Vehicles is bringing in millions of dollars a year by selling your personal information to qualified buyers, ranging from insurance companies to private investigators. State law has outlined 19 exceptions for qualified entities to buy the personal information from the state, or what they call bulk buyers who buy it from DMV. The majority of DMV records are considered public records, and they are available by making a request and paying a fee. Now, I understand that. But what you could also say is we have to give people a way to opt out of that system. And if your next question is, well, Lars, is there a way for me to opt out of the system? And the short answer to that is no. You don't get to opt out of the system, which to me makes no sense at all. I mean, even when dealing with commercial entities, these days it is usually routine for any website that you interact with to ask you, do we have permission to use your data? And if you've decided, no, you don't have my permission, then that is your choice. But when it comes to dealing with state government, it is entirely another matter. In any case, if you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And of course, this segment of the program is brought to you by 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Our X-Poll question today: should states empty their prisons of illegal aliens? And no, we're not talking about rapists and murderers, although there are quite a few illegal aliens who are locked up in prison for both rape and for murder. But should the states empty their prisons of illegal aliens by sending them home? Oklahoma is doing exactly that. The governor of that state, Kevin Stitt, has said that when you have inmates who are approaching the end of their sentence, especially if they are in for nonviolent crimes, crimes that don't involve rape, murder, assault, and they're getting near the end of their sentence, Oklahoma has decided to simply hand those illegal aliens over to the folks at ICE and let ICE send them home. It is going to save them millions and millions of dollars. The average inmate in Oklahoma costs about $36,000 a year to lock up. So 500 of them are going to be going home. Would it make sense for, say, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho to do the same kind of thing? I think it would. I'm going to answer it yes. You can answer the question any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Giresh, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. My name is Giresh. I've been a long-time listener of your
Grisha,
show.
Grisha, I should have said it differently, but I had the pronouncer wrong. Grisha, welcome.
No worries. So I just had a quick, I was listening to your the initial statements that you made regarding the weather today being very hot. Of course, yeah, it's like super hot here. I'm standing outside. But you kind of correlated that with the weather, climate change and global warming, right? Your listeners, I'm sure, are like so much better than misunderstanding both, right? I mean, weather is completely different. It's right here and now and today, and that's how it's measured meteorologically. And climate is a pattern. It's a whole different thing.
I've been pointing that out to people for years. But what we routinely see is tonight, I'll bet if you watch any of the television news, if you listen to any of the meteorologists on radio, you're going to hear them mention climate. You see, well, it's climate change. I mean, that it's climate change is blamed for everything. It's blamed for forest fires. It's blamed for having a hot day in August. And they routinely bring that in. And it's a subtle suggestion to people. You see, it's hot. That's because we have global warming, and they tie the two together. I understand the difference between weather and climate. I also understand that there are cycles of climate that go decades. There are cycles of climate that go literally hundreds of years. But what they've tried to do is sell us climate change for decades now. And it's turned out that most of the predictions, like Al Gore and other politicians more than a decade ago, said that by 5 years from then, which is 5 years ago, the Arctic would be ice-free. Well, it's not ice-free because there is not the kind of generalized warming of the Earth that they had predicted. But the problem is most of the mainstream cartel media will not point out the predictions they made turned out not to be true. Does that match with your thinking?
Absolutely, Lars. I'm not here to debate climate change and global warming. That's a whole different subject for another day. Like, I don't want to do that. I agree with your observations. There is a lot to go against the predictions of climate change today, and it's still a debate, so I'm not going into that. I just want to make sure you are educating your listeners the right way. I know the mainstream media does it the wrong way, but since I'm a big fan of your show, I listen to it. I just want to make sure you...
I always appreciate that. But, Giresha, one of the things I think is my job is debunking things. You know, when there are even conservative folks who will write to me and say, hey, this is happening, and I'll say, no, it's not, if that's the case, because I think it's part of my job to debunk things and say, but I anticipate that the media, including the newspapers and the websites and all that, are going to link the two. They're going to say, it's our opportunity to mention climate change. And I want to warn people, you're going to be sold this bill of goods that because it's hot on a few days in August, that that's some indication that we have generalized global warming.
Global warming has nothing to do with weather being hot today or weather being hot in Africa or India or any other place, right? That's the weather. The whole thing about the climate is the average global temperature change that increases the sea level because of the melting of the ice in the polar regions. That's a whole different thing. These two cannot be tied together.
That's absolutely right. Giresha, thank you very much, and I appreciate the phone call. Glad to have you with me on a Tuesday. Always glad to take your calls on the Radio Northwest Network. Coming up in just a moment, we got a lot to talk about. We're going to get to more of your phone calls, and I'll give you all the details on what Oklahoma is doing that inspired today's X-Poll question. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Worry.
because you can't get enough, Lars. Podcast every show at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and I'm glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Naysayers always go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. And, of course, our X-Bull, I'll give you some details on that story in a moment. It's about how the state of Oklahoma has said, I think very sensibly, we've got a lot of people locked up in our prisons. It costs a lot of money. Some are getting near the end of their sentences. A whole bunch of them, 500 of them, are in the country illegally. Let's just hand them over to ICE and let ICE send them home back to whatever country they came from. On that note, I'll get to the details in a moment. Ken is on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a good point for you. I Googled the mean temperature for the last 100 years.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because it only varied about 3 degrees up and down, up and down. And I'll just make up a year like 1937 with a lull.
Oh, your phone dropped out from it. You said you just make up a year. And what you're saying is if you Google the temperature for a given day over the last 100 years, it varies by a bit, right?
No. Google the full 100 years, and it will list each one of them and the variation. And part of the reason I believe, because I'm a debunker like yourself, that the temperature is in like 2013 was a lull, and that's why they changed it from global warming to climate change.
Yep.
But I think you ought to do that and keep that in your right-hand pocket to be able to talk to people about, because it's such a scam, that global warming.
Yeah, because the lull was important, if I remember right, Ken, because there were people in the 80s who built all these computer models. And they said, hey, the computer models show we're going to be in real trouble by the late 90s. They made a lot of other predictions as well. A decade ago, they were saying the Arctic was going to be ice-free. It's not. They were saying all the glaciers are going to melt. They're not. Although, in some ways, Ken, you know, if you live in North America, you should be glad that glaciers don't persist endlessly, because there was a time when states like Minnesota had massive glaciers covering the northern parts of the state, and they're not there anymore. People live there now. And why? Because glaciers can come during an ice age, either big or little, and then they can go away. And there are people who work in the business of meteorology who seem to want to back climate change so much that they want to ignore the fact that climate has varied over the years. And if people don't believe me, Ken, I always advise them, look up the medieval warming period. I don't have the years in front of me, but it went on for a couple of hundred years. It got warmer for a period of time, and it wasn't during a time of great industry on planet Earth. And then it got cooler after a period of time, which had all kinds of catastrophic effects on crops and food production and things like that. And if you ask them about that, you say, if it's warming now, how do you know it's not the same kind of phenomena or a similar phenomena caused by the same thing that caused the medieval warming period? And they routinely don't have any idea what you're talking about, because they've never actually looked at the history of it.
Actually, on Mount Hood, a couple of years ago, the glacier grew, and that was kind of a real thing. You know, they say how everything is melting, like you mentioned, and the glacier actually grew on Mount Hood, and that was a real thing, and it was close and all those kind of things. I think that's an interesting point. But you're the naysayer, I'll tell you, or the anti-naysayer.
The other thing that people don't take account of, Ken, is the going theory from the 80s forward for all the people who believed in climate change or global warming back when they still called it that. And you're right. They abandoned that terminology because it wasn't cooperating. It wasn't doing what they said it was going to do. But their idea was that CO2 drives warming, when in fact, warming drives CO2. And even a layperson, a non-scientist like me, can understand why. When the Earth had more than 400, we are now above 400 parts per million, but when there were prehistoric times where the Earth had much higher levels of CO2, where did it come from? an awful lot of the earth was green. We had giant areas that are now deserts that were green. And what happens when plants grow? They grow, they die, they fall over, they rot, and they release methane that then turns into CO2. Was that a bad time? No. It was a time where you know, green life, you know, green plant life on planet Earth was very plentiful. And you say, was the plant life causing the CO2? Yes. Was the CO2 causing the warming? No. And they don't seem to appreciate that. By the way, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Ron. Talk about Beto O'Rourke, or as we would rather call him, Robert Francis O'Rourke, former member of Congress, one-time presidential hopeful, flavor of the moment for about 10 minutes at a certain point, and I think he's trying to revive his political career. Ron, welcome to the program.
He's also a former member of the El Paso Pussycats.
The El Paso Pussy, is that a band or what?
Yeah, it was 1995. He was in a band, but then he got some burglary charges, which kind of, I don't know if that affected his band, but it apparently hasn't affected him being in politics either.
No, it hasn't. And people forget about the time when he was driving drunk, crashed his car, and then attempted to flee the scene. Wasn't exactly his proudest moment, was it?
Not at all. And I'm just a little puzzled. I'm just wondering. I heard him all over the news yesterday talking about F the rules for about getting reelected. I'm not aware that he's in any political office. Politicians seem to be able to get away with a lot of verbiage that mostly the American public can't. I'm just wondering, why is he getting away with it?
I think he's getting away with it because both the Democrats and the Republicans see him as old news. He had that flash in the pan. It's like some of those people you see who get into almost any field, whether it's somebody who just wrote a book, and then they're like, oh, that's the next great author, and then they don't produce anything else. Or somebody who shows up in a movie, and they're a flash in the pan, and you think, well, they may go on to be the next great, you know, long-term Hollywood star, or they may be just a flash in the pan. Beto O'Rourke, or Robert Francis O'Rourke, seems to me to be one of those political flashes in the pan who just came, and then he went. And now, you notice he tried to pay for the Democrats to get a private plane to fly to Illinois, and he was going to pay for it with his political action committee, except somebody took him to court and said, you can't legally spend that money. And I think that's where his comments about F the rules are coming from. He wants to be able to go out and say, everybody else is held to the rules, but we are not, and we can do anything we want and get away with it. Well, at this point, I think he's finding out the rules actually do apply to him. Ron, thanks so much for the call. By the way, a few details on what Oklahoma is doing that inspired today's X-Poll. And that is, should we take the prisons in America? Should each state take its prisons and jails and take those illegal aliens, the ones who haven't committed the most serious crimes like rape and murder, and simply send them back to their home countries by handing them over to ICE? That is exactly what Oklahoma is doing right now. They're going to free themselves from the custody of 500 illegal aliens that's currently costing the people of Oklahoma about $36,000 per year, each of them, and simply say to ICE, here you go. They're illegally in the country. They're near the end of their prison sentence. They have a relatively minor conviction of some kind. Take them and send them home right now. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network, a woman who lost her home.
The Lars Larson Show. LarsLarson.com. He actually reads them. More with Lars right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. One of the key privileges in the United States, I consider it a right, is the ability to own private property. And yet the problem is that when you own that private property, and primarily the kind of property that most Americans own, it's about 62% of us own our own homes. And the other 30-some percent are aspiring to own a home. But what happens when you own a home, and in fact a family home that your family has had since the 1950s, so basically three quarters of a century of ownership, and then somebody moves into the home, and takes it over without your permission and holds on to it, and you find out that the legal system, which is always glad to go to bat for people who rent in their housing, is all of a sudden not willing to do much of anything for you. Vicki Lanphier is just that person, and she joins me now. Ms. Lanphier, welcome to the program.
Hi. Nice to have me on.
Would you mind telling me about the house that your, I guess your parents got this house in the 1950s, right?
Well, we moved to Medford in 55 and moved in there. They've lived there all my life. That's where the grandkids, that was their safe place. Just to come over to grandma and grandpa's and family gatherings, my mom. My dad worked. My mom was part-time house working fruit. And then was a homemaker. So, you know, I'd come home after school and here she'd be baking bread and stuff. And so it was that kind of home life. All my friends have wonderful memories of being over at my house with my parents.
I take it that you plan to probably keep that home and your family indefinitely. No plans to sell it or get rid of it.
I'm a single retired woman, and that is my income. So for the past year, I have not had that income and had to live on credit or the kindness of others. And finally getting the, you know, when you're missing $1,200 a month out of your budget, that's a big, I couldn't even pay my taxes this year. I had, my friend did that for me so I wouldn't have it taken away.
By the way, so would you explain to people, you had the house rented at some point, but then your tenant decided to move out, except that that didn't leave the house empty, did it?
No, they came over, he came over and had me sign so they could qualify for their loan because they didn't have a checking account. They paid cash. So I did that, and they were supposed to be out in July. So I go over there, and here's all this garbage, and then I knock on the door, Here's these people, I don't even know. And I'm like, who are you? Oh, you know, I'm Brenda's mom. And I go, where are they? And I knew that they'd moved out to a place in Phoenix. But then I was lied to by the sister saying, oh, I don't know where they moved to. Well, they've been there this whole time with my ex-renter paying the electricity bill. That's how they had TVs and heat, and I paid for the water, of course, because you're going to get in trouble if you turn the water off.
Yeah, because so, even though these people had no permission to be in your home, the home that's been in your family
Adam. So, yeah, the house is trashed, and I'm going to sell it at, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Real estate's coming over. I got to get it cleaned up, and that's a big mess. So, and I'm worried about dirty needles because I found a heroin bag and there was all sorts of alcohol swabs in the driveway where they've been shooting up. So I've really got to be careful about people getting in there because of the drug use. There's not a beer or a wine bottle around the place. It's all hard drugs, fentanyl, heroin, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I couldn't even go over there because it's scary. Now I'm going over checking on it every day because they're kicking in the doors trying to get their stuff. And we have to keep them out so I don't have to start this process again.
And by the way, let's talk about the process in a moment. But just to make people clear, this was a nice little house, not a huge house. But you told me this is almost to the point where you're at a teardown. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going, a real estate agent's coming over today. And it's going to walk through. I know it's a tear down. I just look at the holes in the walls, the kicked in windows, the ripped up carpet. They've done something under the sink where there's a bucket. The only place that was clean was the bathroom. That was the only place that didn't have drug paraphernalia or just piles of clothes and dirty food and rotting food.
Do you think you literally might have to tell somebody, take a bulldozer, bulldoze this thing, load it up in a container, and take it away to the landfill?
Exactly. That is what I'm looking at. Just the piles of garbage that are the whole length of the house and about 4 feet deep. That's something I think a bobcat should handle, because you don't know how many dirty needles are in those bags.
I think a lot
of the garbage is from the previous tenants that didn't clean up after themselves and just move them in. Their pretense was they were going to be cleaning it up. So I was stunned. And then nothing happened. And I didn't want to get out.
When you first discovered that, Vicki, when you first discovered people were living in your home without permission, without paying rent, and leaving a pile of garbage, did you call any authorities? You call the police or anybody else?
No, I didn't know what to do at that point. I think I was stunned and hoping that they were doing what they told me, that they were cleaning up for the previous tenants. And as the month went on and I got somebody to go over there and negotiate, and they gave him this big song and dance. And then he told me, well, you better get a lawyer. So then, or go to the sheriff. So then I started trying to figure out where to go. And I was told, go to the cops. No, we don't do that. I'll go to the state troopers. No, we don't do that. Go to the sheriff. And just, running all over the county, trying to figure out who to get on my case. And finally, I had to borrow money and get an attorney, a really nice attorney. Thank God for him. He even came over and saw when they evicted. And the sheriff said, oh, my God, it was like a clown car. How many people bailed out the backyard and out the front? There must have been over a dozen druggies.
How long did the entire process take to get somebody to move out of your property that they had no business being in to begin with?
We've been there since July when the other ones left, and they were supposed to be cleaning up. They had four dogs in there. So I gave them the benefit of the doubt. And then I realized I really got messed over by my renters I had for 12 years. And this is what they left. And so the previous renter has been paying the electric bill. I've been paying the water and garbage and all that stuff.
So no paying no rent, but just paying the electric bill so members of her family could continue to use your property without permission and without paying rent.
Right. So there was a lot of TVs and probably 10 or so recliners that I have to get rid of. They made all these little rooms in the garage and out in the shed, and they had a pool. And I was bound and determined to get that pool emptied, because it's going to be 107. And the thought of those guys lounging around in the pool was more than I could take. So
would you ever rent housing to anybody again?
No, being a single woman like I am, you need a man to go over there and have the authority. I'm too much of a soft touch. I worked in the medical field. I'm used to people telling me the truth. I worked in the cataract practice. So, I had fun making people see.
Unfortunately, that is a sad story. Vicki Lanphier, homeowner, and now she's probably going to have to bulldoze the house because the people who moved in for a year and took a year and a lawyer and a lot of money to get rid of simply trashed the place to the point where it's a teardown or a bulldoze job. Vicki, thank you. You've got the Lars Larson Show. With
right on the left coast. Get it? Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I've got to tell you this story because this one just floors me. You've got a young lady by the name of Avery Dickinson. She marketed drugs to minors on Instagram, Telegram, and Snapchat. Now, she was 19 years old at the time she was doing it. She is now about 21 now. This is even though the stories about her point out that her best friend died of a drug overdose. A man put a gun to her head during a break-in at her home where she was doing this kind of drug business. The police raided her home because there was an investigation into her boyfriend who was living there for a time, and they seized a whole bunch of drugs. But she kept on selling the drugs. And who is she selling them to? Teenagers. She was 19. She was selling these drugs to kids. Things like ecstasy and LSD and cocaine and oxy and ketamine and Xanax. She even went on Instagram, Snapchat, and Telegram on social media accounts, and she called her business, if you want to call it that, Kiki's Delivery Service, or Stoney's Only 2. And what she would do is she'd take the drugs and put them under a ceramic statue on her front porch, and then customers would just pick them up. I mean, maybe she thought she would escape detection by the police by simply cutting the deal and then putting the drugs out front and getting paid another way. She figures she sold drugs at least once a day and up to 10 times a day over a period that stretched out over about 36 months. And there were times where she told the authorities she would use 16-year-old kids to serve as her runners to deliver drugs to other teenagers. And she also sold drugs to kids at school. Well, she finally got arrested. She got arrested about 2 years ago, June of 2023. And just this May, she decided to plead guilty. She pled guilty under federal charges to distribution of a controlled substance to a person under the age of 21 and sale of counterfeit drugs. She also had charges involving possessing a gun in the course of drug trafficking. Those were all dismissed. Now, she has had counseling. She has apparently kicked a drug habit. But now she's asking, or her attorneys are asking, for a break. She has to surrender to authorities October 2nd of this year. And at that point, she'll go and do her time in federal prison. But she has attorneys who are saying, why don't you cut her a break? She's now living her life the right way. I think that if you take somebody who was dealing drugs to kids, serious drugs, the kind of drugs that can often kill somebody who's using them, and then say, you're not going to have to do any kind of punishment, real punishment, sitting behind bars somewhere, I think that is just dead wrong. The fact that she has been allowed to go through mental health counseling and treatment and sober housing and all the rest of that, and she doesn't even have to surrender herself to prison until October 2nd of this year, I think that's enough latitude. At that point, she needs to sit behind bars for a time and not get any more breaks. Let's go to George. Hey, George, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Okay, you know, when you were discussing weather, one of the things that came up with all these wildfires we've been having.
Yeah.
And I know how to reduce the frequency and the severity of these wildfires, and that's by opening up more public lands to cattle grazing, because you're just letting the fuel just pile up every year. And it piles up, and then the fires, when they happen, they're out of control. If they opened up more public lands to cattle grazing, then you would see, like I said, a reduction, great reduction, frequency, severity of wildfires, and you see the price of beef go down. So the only reason why it don't happen is that the left, they hate red meat, they don't want people eating red meat, and they hate cowboy culture. That's I think, the root of it. And I know that they make things harder for cattlemen. So that's all I got to say right now.
You know, George, I wouldn't disagree that when you have a lot of grazing on public lands, BLM or Forest Service, you know, the ranchers don't pay much for it, but it isn't worth that much. Because if they're grazing in areas that are full of fuel on the forest floor, so you've got a mix of wild lands, you know, without trees and trees. The problem is, the cattle can't do much about the dropped branches and other parts of the tree or fallen trees. They're not going to eat that. They'll eat whatever green stuff grows up. And it's not a bad way to reduce the amount of fuel. But if you don't go in and log those areas and actually cut the trees down, pile up the brush, burn the brush, get rid of or burn the slash piles of debris, then that stuff on the floor, I've had experience on my friend's land. He's passed away now. But if you have piles and piles of the kind of limbs that routinely pile up around trees in a forest and you don't get rid of them, there isn't much green that grows on that forest floor, because it's all buried under lots and lots of limbs and other debris that the cows are not going to eat. So you need a combo of both increased grazing. And one of the problems you're up against right now is grazing on just grass is not necessarily going to make those cows fat, which is what the ranchers ultimately want, right?
Well, okay, so you got to bring out some goats. The difference is cattle's graze. Goats, okay, there's a term for goats, and I'm having a brain fart right now. There's
ruminants? Are they ruminants?
They're browsers.
Browsers, yeah.
And so what it is here, they eat stuff that the cattle will not eat.
Yep.
Goats is not really big on the American diet. I think you could kind of introduce it more, maybe school lunches or something like that. certainly dairy products. And, of course, the hide is worth money.
Although I would swear, George, that when I was in high school, you know, when I went to Tillamook High School, I swear they had goat on the menu at least once a week. Now, you know, of course, that may be slighting the lunch ladies, but I swear they had goat in some of what we were eating. George, thanks for the call. Back in a moment. It's a Tuesday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.
Ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get you your phone calls and emails. You're going to find this one kind of bizarre. Have you ever heard of huaraches? I mean, most of us would just call them sandals, but they are leather shoes. They've probably literally been around for hundreds, maybe even thousands of years. Well, now Mexico is accusing one shoe company in particular, Adidas, and it is all about cultural misappropriation. I thought maybe we'd left that nonsense behind, but all this garbage about saying, oh, that's somebody else's culture, you're not allowed to use it. Would you believe this? Mexican authorities are now accusing one of the biggest sports shoe companies in the world. It's Adidas, at least that's the way Americans say it. The actual name of the guy is Adi Dassler, so you could say Adidas, but it makes it sound funny. Most Americans say Adidas, and they are accusing Adidas of plagiarizing their designs for huaraches to the detriment of people in southern Mexico. Let me get into the details of that in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you're a naysayer, we always put naysayers right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Our X poll today: should states empty their prisons of illegal aliens by simply handing them over to ICE so that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, can simply send them home? Now, the dirty little secret in America is that huge numbers of illegal aliens come into this country and they commit crimes. Now, some of them commit very serious crimes like murder and rape. I'm not in favor of sending those people back to their home countries until they have completed their punishment in America. Although, over the years, I've made the proposal that let's say you have an illegal alien from Mexico or, more recently, El Salvador. If you could make a deal with those countries and say, we're going to send this joker home. He is guilty of a serious crime in our country, but there is no reason for him to stay in the relative comfort of an American prison. We'd rather see him locked up in, say, Mexico or El Salvador or Guatemala or Honduras. And in fact, I've even made the proposal, maybe we should tell those countries, we're willing to pay you to keep them locked up. And let me tell you one reason that I've always made that calculation. In the United States today, in Oklahoma, where they're doing exactly this, they are going to send 500 illegal aliens back to their home countries by handing them over to ICE. Most of these are guilty of crimes that are not murder and rape, or they are nearing the end of their sentence in prison in Oklahoma. So, what is that costing Oklahoma? In round numbers, about $1 million every month is being spent to keep these people locked up. Now, I say relative comfort because I would imagine, based on what I know about foreign prisons, never having been in one myself, I've been in plenty of American prisons as a reporter to talk to people who are locked up in prison for various kinds of crime. I've been in federal prisons. I've been in state prisons. I've been in local jails, county jails, always not as a guest, but always as a reporter to talk to some of the people who are locked up there. That those are relatively nice compared to what I hear about foreign prisons. Would you want to go to a Guatemalan prison or an El Salvador prison, like the one CECOT, the one that they built specially to lock up terrorists in that country, the one that became famous after Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the man that all the media insisted on calling a Maryland man instead of an illegal alien, accused human trafficker? No. I would love to see us tell those countries, if you're willing to lock them up, as long as you show us proof that they are still locked up, we'd be glad to pay you the local going rate. I'm willing to bet it is less than the $36,000 a year that states like Oklahoma have to pay to keep these guys locked up. So should the states empty their prisons of illegal aliens by handing them to ICE to be sent home to their home countries? I would say yes to that question. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me get back to Adidas, or if you want to be technical about it, Adidas. So Adidas has made a Oaxaca slip-on. It's a sandal. It's a leather sandal, and it doesn't look like anything else other than that. But now the country of Mexico is accusing Adidas of plagiarizing artisans in southern Mexico. They say a brand new sandal design is strikingly similar to the traditional indigenous footwear that is known as huaraches. So it was created by a U.S. designer by the name of Willy Chiavara for Adidas Originals. And the president of Mexico actually weighed in on this on Friday and said that Adidas was already in talks with authorities in the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca to provide compensation for the people who are plagiarized. I hate to see a company actually cave in and simply hand money to somebody to pay them for this, because if you go online like I did, I don't wear huaraches. I don't have any objection to them. They're just not my style. But if you look up huaraches and try to find shoes that look a particular way, you're going to find different kinds of leather sandals that literally look a thousand different ways. There is no one way to make it. If you said basketball, I can show you basketballs, and most of the basketballs made in America, made in Europe, made almost anywhere on the planet, they all look relatively the same. They're almost identical. If you look up soccer ball, they all look pretty much the same. If you look up baseball and you differentiate between softball and hardball, most baseballs look basically identical to others. But when it comes to huaraches, they're very, very different. So what are they saying? They're basically holding Adidas up and demanding a ransom. They're saying, if you don't do something about this, we're going to drag you into a courtroom. I don't know that it would be in America. It might be, but it was created by a U.S. designer. And I think they're suggesting, if we go into a courtroom and you have 12 people in the jury box, and we're going to tell them how this major international multi-billion-dollar sports shoe company, Adidas, is ripping off some poor indigenous designers in southern Mexico, they know how a jury is likely to respond to that. They're likely to hand a verdict to the, not the shoe company, but hand the verdict off to this poor artisan in southern Mexico. And the fact that Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, is saying, well, we're going to work this thing out. Money will be paid. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm sad to see companies like Adidas cave into this kind of extortion. And I think that's exactly what it is. In any case, glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you want to answer our X poll, you can find it online at Lars Larson Show on X and on my website at LarsLarson.com. Coming up in just a moment, a 13-year-old Tennessee girl ends up being strip searched and put in solitary over something she said on social media that was spotted by the surveillance of AI programs used by her school. You're going to want to hear that story in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. If you're...
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google. Yeah, he's everywhere. The Lars Larson Podcast.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I guess it is no longer safe for somebody like me to use one of my favorite Shakespeare lines, and I don't use a lot of Shakespeare lines. First, we kill all the lawyers. Now, you have to know the context in which that line was actually used in Shakespeare. I don't know if it was Henry VIII. I can't remember. Don't expect me to quote Shakespeare, but that one I love. First, we kill all the lawyers. And you say, Lars, that's an outrageous thing, except then you realize Shakespeare was actually a little more clever than that. He wasn't literally talking about kill all the lawyers. It was a metaphorical reference to a system that was all screwed up. And believe me, in America, we know about systems that are all screwed up. But you want screwed up? Think about this. A 13-year-old schoolgirl in Tennessee who ended up strip searched and put into solitary confinement in a jail. And why? Because the school's AI surveillance system for students, well, basically identified her as a threat to the school. I'll give you the details in just a moment. Glad to get your calls first at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you can answer our X poll as well. That has to do with the fact that one of the 50 states in America is actually doing something sensible. That is, states have prisons that are often filled with a disproportionate number of illegal aliens who've committed crimes. Now, that costs Americans a lot of money. So what has Oklahoma decided to do? They have decided to take about 500 illegal aliens and that are either nearing the end of the sentence for the crime they did, or they were convicted of something less than the most serious crimes, like rape and murder. And they're going to hand them off to ICE and say, send these jokers home. That is going to save Oklahoma, for starters, at least $1 million a month, because they no longer have to have them locked up at about $36,000 every year, about $3,000 every month. So should the states empty their prisons of illegal aliens by sending most of them, with the murders and rapists accepted, send most of them home? And would you ever like the idea of saying to a foreign country, you know what? One of your foreign nationals came into our country and committed a horrible crime, like murder or rape. We'd be willing to pay you the going rate in your country to lock this person up as long as you keep them locked up. I've even suggested ways we could make sure that that's actually being done. Anyway, you can find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. And then I mentioned the fact that Mexico has now told Adidas, or if you want to say it the right way, Adidas, that they ripped off a design for Huaraches. Now, I don't think that claim is actually true, but the country of Mexico, including the president of Mexico, have demanded that Adidas make good. And apparently Adidas has now decided it's cheaper just to write a check to somebody or pay some cash than it is to actually fight this one out. And I agree with that. On that note, Armin has called in. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program. You heard that story. What do you think people ought to make of it?
Yeah, well, this is Armin from Maury Island. We've talked about how it was named after some lieutenant hundreds of years ago. Anyway, I heard your piece about that, and I was, what flashed in through my brain was the Beach Boys, Surfing USA, Huarache Sandals, California. So should we, should they be contacting the Beach Boys and retroactively demanding royalties for their having used that word as well?
Don't put it past them, Armin. They might just do that, because this is what floors me. There are certain things out there, and I understand, I respect intellectual property. If somebody comes up with something that is truly unique, but if you're going to say that leather sandals that have been around at least since before the time of Jesus Christ himself, if you're going to say, well, those leather sandals look just like the leather sandals that are being made by people in southern Mexico, Huaraches are just leather sandals. Is somebody really saying that you can trademark or copyright leather sandals and that Adidas has to pay the freight? Or is this just Mexico trying to hold them up for a little bit of ransom?
Armin? You wonder where it's going to end.
Well, I mean, it'll end when some company decides to tell Mexico, you know what? They're leather sandals. That's all they are. And if you claim that somehow the people who live in, and this is what the claim is from the president of Mexico, that in southern Mexico, they have sandals, leather sandals, that look a lot like the sandals that Adidas just put out as the Oaxaca slip-on. Armin, don't you think that most leather sandals in the world look like every other pair of leather sandals in the world, whether they're called huaraches or anything else?
Well, each one is a little different, but I just don't get what the fuss is about. How about penny loafers? Are we supposed to go to the, is the Treasury, U.S. Treasury, going to say, hey, you're using the term penny, and we're the people who mint pennies, so pay up?
Yeah, it sounds like that's the kind of idea. Armin, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. I thought of that Shakespeare line when I saw this story about a 13-year-old girl who's an eighth grader at Fairview Middle School in Tennessee. She was actually arrested by the police. And if you wonder, what horrible crime did she commit? Well, apparently this young lady, whose name has been withheld from the story, and I think that's a good thing. She's 13 years old. Give her a little bit of room. She apparently has a very tan complexion, and a lot of her friends kid her about being Mexican. So apparently online, a friend had asked her what she was planning to do last Thursday. And she said, on Thursday, we kill all the Mexicos. And she said, it's not a serious comment. She was not planning to go out and threaten her school. And yet, guess what happened? Because this might come as news to a lot of you. The school, in her case in Tennessee, uses a program called Gaggle. And Gaggle is an artificial intelligence program to monitor chat rooms for threats. But because it's a machine and it doesn't understand the context, well, it immediately flagged the sentence as a threat to all Mexicans who happen to go to school in Fairview Middle School in Tennessee. So, did the school decide to take a close look at what it was the girl said, what the context was, and then no. They immediately called the police. The police showed up at the school, and they arrested the girl, who they described as bewildered. They drove her down to the police station, kid you not. They strip searched her. They forced her to shower on camera. They then coerced her into signing documents she didn't understand without a lawyer, and they threw her into solitary confinement. They kept her isolated. This is from Not the Bee. Her parents didn't even know where she was, and when they finally found out what had happened, they were not allowed any contact until the girl's solitary confinement was completed. A judge later kept up the lack of due diligence, ruled that the poor girl was probably mentally retarded. That's what the judge said about her, ordered a psych evaluation, placed her under house arrest where she was not allowed contact with anybody but her parents. All of that because the girl made a joke to her friends, an inside joke where her friends had kidded her about being very, very tan, and it wasn't the case. Now, Gaggle has alerted more than 1,200 incidents to various school districts in a very short period of time. But about two-thirds of those alerts were deemed by school officials to be non-issues, including over 200 false alarms that came from student homework. You got to be careful of that AI stuff. It is a threat to free speech and a lot of other freedoms in America. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Political climate. He's the steamroller. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. So President Trump is going to meet with Vladimir Putin in Alaska. I think he should do a land acknowledgement at the beginning saying, I have to acknowledge that this land once belonged to Russia. And then we bought it from them for a song, and we've been glad ever since, and we're not selling it back. But I want to talk about this meeting and whether or not this summit between Trump and Putin is actually part of a genuine peace process, or is it Putin just trying to buy some time? Colonel William Berner Dunn is author of Gunfighter's Rule, and he joins me now. Colonel Dunn, thanks for coming on the program. Can I call you Berner?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what all my friends do, so thank you.
Well, I'm glad to do it. What should we make of this little head-to-head between Putin and Trump?
I think it's outstanding. You know, what we have to do, whether they're our friends or our enemies or our allies or something in between, we must engage with them. That's the best way to get things done. Talking things out, you know, knowing your adversary is the best way to make them not your adversary. And so I believe, you know, I don't know Putin or, and I've never personally met President Trump. I believe they have a mutual respect for each other, and we should have a healthy respect for our enemies, if you want to consider him our enemy. But we have to have a healthy respect, because if we don't, that puts the world into turmoil. And the mutual respect piece goes a long way in getting to a what I consider a potential peace process. I don't know what will come out of this, but I think it's the step one in a getting this peace finalized.
Well, you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see the end of the Ukraine conflict, the war. And the reason I do is I want to stop flushing money into a notoriously corrupt country. I'd like to see them settle up their issues between the two countries, and I don't expect that either one is going to be entirely happy with whatever it is that results. Russia isn't going to get everything they want. Ukraine probably won't get everything they want, but at the end, that's how most wars end, isn't it?
Well, unless it's an unconditional surrender, absolutely. So Ukraine's not going to do an unconditional surrender, and they should not. They have the assets and the manpower to outlast at least the current, the way that Russia is treating this war, which is limited fashion, where it's total war in Ukraine. It's almost impossible, you know, and I say that from my belief, it's almost impossible for a limited war to win in a total war. When you know, if you go limited to limited, it's anyone's game. But if it's a total war, which is a country like Ukraine fighting for their survival, or think of Israel, Israel's always in total war. It's very difficult for a adversary with a limited war that's using that as their attack and their plan to win, because the one adversary is all in. So they're not going to get what they both want. I believe they both want to end this. The difference is Ukraine can end this and doesn't have to worry about losing face because they were the invaded country.
Right.
Whereas Putin has to end this, but he cannot lose face. If he loses face, his regime goes down, and then, you know, that's just not going to happen. That's not in the Russian psyche. So I don't think that's going to happen. So I believe that President Trump will use some methods and some methodologies to allow him to off-ramp, and regardless of what the world believes, as long as Putin believes that he was a victor here, even if he doesn't get everything that he wants, that's the best way to off-ramp this situation.
Colonel, let me ask you this. I'm talking to Colonel William Bernard Dunn, who's the author of Gunfighter's Rule. One of the concessions that I understand that Russia wants is that Ukraine agrees to stay relatively neutral and not become a member of NATO. Is that a reasonable request by Russia, and should Ukraine stay in a neutral position? Because they've chosen sides before. During World War II, they chose the Nazi side, and I think there's still echoes of that in what's going on in Ukraine. Should the West say, okay, we're not going to make Ukraine part of NATO, but Russia, you need to stop messing with Ukraine? Is that reasonable?
I think that's reasonable. You know, I don't know that I want Ukraine in NATO, because I also concur that there's corruption there. You know, I run a small business that supports some of our allied partners in different means, in different ways. And we put together several packages to support Ukraine against Russia. And we spent a tremendous amount of time and effort, and all we were waiting on is the execution, was the money to be sent. And we knew the money was there because we all saw it. And every time, it never got past the money. So where did all this money that we sent Ukraine go? To buy weapons and capabilities, right? Think about that. Billions upon billions upon billions in many companies, and many of my peer companies try to support, right? Because we do not want a Russia aggression in Europe. So where did that money go? I don't think it all went to weapons. I don't think it all went to defense. And we need to figure that out. So I don't think they should be in. I think that is a reasonable off-ramp. What will never work in my mind is if Ukraine all of a sudden, if we say, hey, Russia, you stop, and then we let Ukraine into NATO, that is going to be a face-losing end state for Russia and for Vladimir Putin, and I think that's a non-starter. And I, you know, that to me becomes the precipice for World War III, because then if someone's in NATO and they attack one, they attack all.
Yep.
You know, that's, we do not want to put that, what I consider that fragile issue right now. Now, off ramp now, let everything calm down, put some time and space between this war, and then let's maybe reevaluate. But for now, let's make it a no way Ukraine comes into NATO. That gives Putin an off ramp. Let's end this fighting. And then what we need to do is shore up NATO, shore up Europe to ensure that Russians' ambitions, if you will, we assume there's a lot of assumptions going out there. You'll always see it, and everybody's planning for it and building whole plans and con plans to say, what about Russians' ambitions in Europe? Maybe they're not as ambitious now after his three-year-long devastating failure in Ukraine. Yep. Maybe his ambitions have already been thwarted. So let's not stoke the fire.
And should America stop messing around with Ukraine? And by that, I mean the actions of the Obama administration, which it appears that from the outside that Russia's tried to install pro-Russia governments in Ukraine. America is not blameless, has tried to do the very same thing, pro-Western governments in Ukraine. Should both sides leave that alone?
Well, the reality is neither side will leave that alone, because Ukraine is a strategically valuable area. And so if you have to always believe that every country is going to do what's in their best interest. So if we were to make a statement that, hey, we're not going to mess with Ukraine anymore, as long as Russia doesn't, Russia may say, okay, we're out. But 2 weeks later, they're back in. They're back in either meddling or trying, because they are not going to allow a forward presence NATO on their border. And that's really what I believe they are pressing for. I firmly believe two things. Russia absolutely underestimated Ukraine at the beginning of this. But the biggest, most important point is we overestimated Russia's capability at every aspect across the board. And I remember training in the Marine Corps for, you know, Russia tactics, Russia fight, studying Russia, looking at everything possible. And when I watch videos and I've seen the outcomes, I'm shocked at their inability to execute what I would consider not even high-level combat operations, but low-level to medium-level combat operations.
In Ukraine. Colonel Dunn, thank you very much. We'll have you back. That's Colonel Bernard Dunn, author of Gunfighter's Rule. We appreciate your service, and thanks for the time. Back in a moment.
Wise words from President Reagan.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us. We the people are the driver. The government is the car. And we decide where it should go.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. One we're looking into for tomorrow, especially for the Radio Northwest Network. The Washington State Fair is apparently targeting a number of conservatives. Now, you would think that the state fair would be open to all, but there was a pro-life group that wanted to set up a display at the Washington State Fair, and apparently they were told you are not welcome. They have also put restrictions on the Pierce County Republican Party, and we're going to see if we can get a representative of the Pierce County Republican Party to come on and talk about that issue. By the way, Theodore writes in about the meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin that's going to happen in Alaska. He said this meeting with Putin is another waste of time. I can't believe he's meeting with Putin. If anything, Putin and Russia owe big time for all the damage they've done and all the lives that are lost. Trump has made this matter worse as time has passed. He's been there 8 months. And that if Trump were a badass, he would have taken Putin's life last February. Actually, we have an executive order that most presidents, I think, have felt constrained by, that you don't take out the leadership of foreign countries, no matter how much you don't like them. Putin does not respect Trump, it says. I'm very disappointed with Trump on this matter. Well, Theodore, I wish people would get their story straight. You've got people on the left who are continually telling you that Donald Trump is best friends with Putin, and then they tell you at the same time Putin does not respect Trump, does not fear Trump. Well, you know, figure out which one it is that you actually believe, because I'm not sure that you know which one you believe. And then this one from Randy. Growing up in Ashland, I've been exposed to the Bard for a long time. He's talking probably about my reference to the Shakespearean line, "First we kill all the lawyers." Angus Bomer, founder of the Oregon Shakespearean Festival, gives talks every year explaining myths and truths regarding the works of Shakespeare. The line is taken out of context and is not an exact quote. I said that. You have to understand that what they're generally referring to is that the society at that time was seriously screwed up, and that that was the way of expressing the character's reference to it. It has obviously been used a lot since then. He says it was so popular that T-shirts with the saying were sold for years. So, Randy, if you're going to write to me and say it isn't in Shakespeare and then say it is in Shakespeare, but it's just a different context, I've already mentioned it was in a different context. Randy says, I think we need to unelect all the lawyers in Congress and replace them with common sense Americans experienced in business instead of law. I like that idea as well. In fact, I think one of the reasons that Donald Trump has done so well is that he's not a typical politician. Now, he may have become a politician in the last 10 years, but he still has that private sector approach to things, that if he says Washington, D.C. is messed up, we're going to go in and clean up the mess. They're not going to sit there and say, well, we'll do it through the right process and we'll ask Washington, D.C.'s leadership, could you pretty please clean up your crime problem? Donald Trump said, I gave you a chance to clean it up. If you're not going to clean it up, I'm going to clean it up. And if you haven't seen the videos that are coming out of Washington, D.C. right now, you see National Guard, you see federal officers, including FBI and U.S. Marshals, and they're going into Washington, D.C. And the president has said he is now in charge of the Metro D.C. police. And I don't think D.C. knows what to think of this. They're clearly, the city itself is only a creation of the U.S. Congress. The U.S. Congress could simply say, we're not going to let you continue operating the way that you do. They are still under federal control. And, of course, they're still demanding that somehow they be given statehood. And two senators and a rep and all the rest of that. Bonnie writes in, because I mentioned the crazy allegation from Mexico that somehow the big shoe company called Adidas is the way Americans say it. Adi Dassler was the name of the guy who founded the company. And in Europe, they call it Adidas. So whichever one you like. She says that style has been around forever. I remember when they came back in style in the 70s. This iteration is not lovely. The upper looks traditional. The soles are absolutely ridiculous. I'm so tired of people looking for things to be upset about. Well, the only reason Mexico says it's upset, to the point where the president of Mexico has actually weighed in on the fight between what they call artisans in southern Mexico, saying that Adidas has ripped off their shoe design, it's so they can hold Adidas up for ransom and say, you need to pay these people because you took their design for a leather sandal. Leather sandals have been around since the time of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine saying, why, that leather sandal, the one that you're making, it looks so much like all the other leather sandals in the world? Absolutely it does. So, in any case, glad to get your calls. Let me go to Rob in Mount Vernon. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind?
Oh, sure wish I could have asked the colonel while he was there, but I just never hear anybody talking about why the real reason Russia has invaded Ukraine. Ukraine is the Eastern European grain basket, and Russia doesn't have it, and they need food. And that's Putin is not going to give up. He's going to take whatever he can, and I don't think anything is going to come out of the meeting in Alaska this week.
Well, you may be right about that. We'll see. What I'd like to see is no more billions or tens of billions of dollars from the United States going into Ukraine for something that is not part of our national defense. Rob, I appreciate the call. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.